new people arrived. Good. Welcome. Good to see you. Yeah. And we talked this afternoon. What did we talk about? It's important to know the character of God. Not only to know with our thought life, but with our heart. This, I think, is the most important thing. And he says, nobody knows the Father, no one but Jesus. Why? Because he had that experience to be at the bosom of the Father in heaven. He and the Father were one, are one. So he knew him by experience. And now he says, I can, therefore, reveal the Father, make him known. And he is, sometimes you think, when you talk about revelation, you think about words. He gives you a word of revelation. But I think that he meant it in a different way. That he says, you know the Father, but you know him from a distance. And I am the one who can make him known through intimacy, through the experience, the heart experience. And this makes it personal. When you hear an anointed message, it's not per definition that it makes it personal for you. You hear a good message. So it's, for us, it's so important that we turn around and we say, no, Father, I want you for me. I want that experience. Because if it is a heart experience, difficulties can come. But when you have experienced something, it's real for you. And that is what we need. There was a friend of me, and I met him last week, and he said, you turn your message, you coming into my life turned my life around, upside down. He says, but sometimes I'm in a season where I find it difficult to, I'm not sure if I'm just imagining everything, making it up. How do I know that it is real? So actually what he was saying is, I need that personal experience, not only the theological, not only the talking, not only the preaching, but I need it in a personal way. And so I said to him, well, yeah, how can you give him advice? I mean, that's a personal thing. And I said, well, if you look from the other way around, do you believe that Jesus, that God sent Jesus in this earth? For him, that was easier to believe. Okay, yes, I believe that Jesus was walking this earth and he was the Son of God. Yes, he was the Son of God. Okay, then you start from there, you start from God, and then you say, well, but if he sends his Son for me, then it must be real. So if you come with putting yourselves in the center and say, well, is it all true, God? Then you start from an ecocentric point. It's important when it is difficult that you change, that you say, no, I want to put God in the center. And then you have to find some anchors, some points that you know. Yes, I know Jesus is there. I know that he came and that he died on the cross. And then you start from the other way out, and other way, and then you can have faith for that what you may be at that moment not experience. So what did we say? We said it's important the righteousness that brings holiness, and that's the part, the one side of the coin from Franklin. And Jesus is the righteous one. No one of us is righteous, not one. Jesus is the one, and we can receive it just like that. It is the wedding garment that is provided. It was in the parable, it is in Revelation. The wedding garments, the linen, is the righteous deeds, and it's given to us. The righteous deeds are given to us. It's amazing. It's amazing, the God we serve. It's Ezekiel 36, where he says exactly the same thing. I give you a new heart, I give you a new spirit. I'll make you walk the righteous path. I'll do it for you. And it's so easy that you almost can't believe it. That it is that easy. But he says, let me tell you one thing, you can't do it. So we have to know and believe. That's a belief. We have to believe that we cannot do it. We have to know. And then you come to the point that you say, but if I can't do it, I'm depending on you. And that is when he says, yes, exactly. That is how I made you to be. I designed you in such a way that you're depending on me, that I am a father and a father loves to give. That's my nature. So that's why I created you in the way that I did. I did it so that my father heart can be overflowing from joy when I can just give all the good things to my children. And they can just receive it. And through receiving from Father God, you can come to the full destination that he has in mind for you. Through intimacy, you receive your identity, and then you can come to your God-given destiny. Through intimacy, you receive your identity, sonship, and then you can reach your God-given destiny. Now, how do we get love and holiness? That was where we started off with. That's the question. Well, the righteousness we see, and we also said that the absence of sin does not equal holiness. Or not disobeying does not equal obedience. That's one to think about. No disobedience does not equal obedience. Obedience is an act. It's active, not passive. Now, Jesus brings the glory. He is the righteous one, but he is also bringing the glory. Hebrews 1, who being the brightness of his glory. He's being the brightness of his glory. So he brought the glory of God down, and he made it, so to speak, visible, the express image of his person. So he carried the image, the character, the nature of God. And because Jesus was human, That's the whole point. Because Jesus was, he was spirit, and he agreed to become flesh. It's amazing. No other religion does it. No other religion. Every other religion has a God, and the God says, you try to come up. And my God says, I come down. And he says, I will become like you so that you can get to know me. Because flesh and spirit are two different things. We lost the spirit when we sinned in the Garden of Eden. That is James Jordan. He wrote in a book, and he says, permit me to give the people, the man in the Garden of Eden, to give them a color. He says, C.S. Lewis does the same. And he took that example from C.S. Lewis. He says, but I fill it in my own way. He says, the people in the Garden of Eden, let's say they were green. Well, green is made of two other colors. Yellow and blue. So yellow is the sand, the earth, the earthly part. Blue is the spirit. Now, when they sinned, the spirit left. So they were no longer green, but they turned yellow. Now they tried, because they knew that they were supposed to be green. So they put some green leaves, trying to become, you try to, through obedience, through, I want to become green. You put on a green t-shirt and you do everything. But in nature, nothing changes. You're yellow. Until the day of Pentecost, where the Spirit came and was again part of us. So this gives an example that a yellow person, through obedience, does not become a green person. So a yellow person, for a yellow person, it has no effect of just being obedient. So obedience in itself is not what God asks. If you ask obedience, this is God, this is man. We are meant to be united with God, have intimacy with him, the unity. But when you become born again, you start here. And then the process of coming to God and learning to be in this intimacy, and that's a process. It's with all kind of levels, and maybe one level you're already more intimate with God, and another level you still have to learn to let go. And so that it's not black or white. Now we get mixed up. So when we are here, when we are separated from God, you can believe in him, you can pray to him, you can give your tithes to him, you can give Bible study, you receive, but everything is possible. But you're still an orphan. Here, you receive, from the Father, you receive the identity of sonship. That makes the difference. So from the identity of sonship, you receive from the Father, you receive that DNA, you receive from him, things are changed, and then you can represent him. A orphan can never represent the Father in a good way. He doesn't know what a real father is. Why not? Because he has not experienced him. So we need an experience of what God really is. So if you now tell an orphan If you give him, if God would tell him, you need to obey me, he will be put under a law. So it's not God says, I don't want to put you under the law. So obedience is not the first thing. It's if God just, if you just think, well, I spoil my own preaching now because I wanted to ask you the question. Hearing the voice of God, is that important, yes or no? Yes. And what comes next? And then when you hear the voice of God, after that comes, tell me, help me, obedience. So that was, of course, that is that I should have said that before. Yeah. So that's what we usually think. Hearing the voice of God and then obedience. Now, when you are an orphan, is it possible to hear the voice of God? Yes or no? Yes. Give me an example from the Bible. James. Who? James? Cain. Yeah, let's go to the New Testament. Yeah, Cain is also... is. But yeah. Saul. Paul. He was still in the orphan position and heard the voice of God. I always come up, of course, with the parable of the prodigal son. And the prodigal son has a brother. Now, the brother, he said, he heard, he was, so he heard his voice. And he says, I've always obeyed you, done what you asked. I've always done it. So he heard the voice and was obedient. But where did it bring him? Did it bring him into the arms of the Father? No. Now, the prodigal son, was he from start obedient or disobedient? Disobedient. Where did his disobedience bring him? In the end.
To the Father's house.
Look at that. Now, I brought trouble.
You needed the Father.
You need the Father. Look, how come that it is possible that disobedience leads to the Father and obedience keeps you away from him? Can you imagine? You've never heard such a thing. We've always said disobedience is wrong, obedience is good. Keep it simple. In this parable, it's the opposite. How come? The disobedience is like unrighteousness. The obedience done from a distance is self-righteousness. Now, disobedience, unrighteousness, brought the prodigal son to the point that he realized, I have nothing left. I can't do it. So he came to the conclusion that he could not do it. That does unrighteousness. The self-righteousness, the son, the older son, he said, I've done it. I have done it. So still, he was sure that he did the right thing. So the self-righteous, with self-righteousness, it's more difficult to come to the point and give up and realize that you can't do it, because you're still doing it. You're still doing it. But you're on the wrong path. And the unrighteousness, the disobedience of the son, brought him to the point where he just got stuck. Now, it's for God, he doesn't start with asking obedience. Because then he puts the people under a law. You have to, because they are separated from him. He can't do it for them. So he says, first of all, I'll bring you in. That's why he says what we said this morning, that he invited the good and the bad in the wedding feast. And he says, you just come. Come as you are. And then they get to know him. The negative part from the prodigal son, the experience, the negative experience brought him to the point that he says, I need a change. Father says, okay, you can come. The good and the bad. And then I make it right for you. So all the people that received the wedding garment, they made the decision, I cannot come in my own clothing. I need the garment that is offered to me. So they all came to the conclusion they could not be coming on their own, in their own strength, apart from one. That is what the parable says. And then God says, no, and you're in the wrong place. Then you need to find your own place. And that is not the wedding feast. That is outside. And, he described what he would find there. But this was not the heart of the Father. The heart of the Father was not to expel him from the room. The heart of the Father was, come in. I have an extra wedding garment for you. I have it for you. That's the heart of the Father. Now, back to Peter. Jesus comes to Peter. And what does he do? What is he doing? He is... He wants disciples, people that follow him and that he can join his life with. He can reveal the Father to them. That was first the 12. He could reveal the Father to them. So Jesus comes and he is in fact carrying the glory. God is with him. So interestingly is when he comes to invite Peter to follow him, he's not talking about himself. He's not saying, hey, Peter, you can be proud of yourself because I'm just picking you and I'm the Son of God, you know. you cannot imagine what you will experience. We will raise the dead and make the blind see, and you will be very privileged. Do you want to follow me? It's not that way. He is not presenting himself, he is interested in him. He comes down to the shore. He comes into his boat. Can I lend you a boat? And Peter says, okay. And then he speaks to the people from his boat. And then he, of course, we have the miracle of the not fish catch. That's the first one. After that, because they catched nothing. Nothing. That's a miracle. When you a whole night you can catch one little fish, but nothing is a miracle. So that was the first miracle. Then the second miracle is the catch, and just throw your net at the other side, and then it was so much. So Peter recognized the glory. Now let me. Let me give you one verse. John 16:8 in the Amplified. And he, when he comes, will convict the world about the guilt of sin and the need for a savior, it says, and about righteousness and about judgment. So sin, righteousness, and judgment. I was reading this verse always in a certain way. I thought, he comes and he will show the world, sinners, here is sin. And judgment comes because of sin. And look to who is righteous, that's me. You know, actually that was my thinking. He is coming, and then he would let the world see the reality. But now, I think differently. Look, the glory, Jesus comes with the glory. Let's read what happens to Peter. Luke 5:7-8. They waved to their business partners in the other boat for help. That was just when the miracle of the catch had taken place. They ended up completely filling both boats with fish until their boats began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this astonishing miracle, he knelt at Jesus' feet and begged him, "Go away from me, Master, for I am a sinful man." And then my eyes were opened. The glory comes. The glory tells us something about God. But when it comes to you, it tells you something about yourself. It tells you you're sinful. Not in a condemning way that you're crushed, but in the way that you say, I need to be changed. I can see clearly that I need a change. And that is exactly what is necessary. We need the conviction that we cannot do it. The prodigal son needed to come to the point that he knew that he could not make it. Peter, Jesus is coming to Peter, and because of the glory and the miracles, he says, "Whoa! Now I realize, when I see you in your glory, I see who I am." And then Jesus says, "Come follow me." And then he says in the Passion Translation, "I will transform you on the way." Isn't it wonderful? So Peter, look, it's getting better. Sinful Peter, Jesus called sinful Peter to follow him. So you must not try to become a disciple so you can follow Jesus. You must not try to become a disciple to follow Jesus. You must follow Jesus so he can make you a disciple. It's a big difference. So Peter, look, even Jesus emphasized on it. He said, "You can come as you are." He says, "I'll make you a fisher of men." That was the identity of Peter. He was fisherman. And he says, "You can come with your own identity. I make you a fisher of men. I love you as you are. You don't need to be changed for me to love you. And I use you the way you are. Dionysian is on the way. We will get a change going on. That's a process. It's not something I put on you. It's something that you go through. And because of the experience you go through, you can be changed from the inside out. When you're changed from the inside out, obedience comes from the inside. It's not a command. Obedience will is a longing to do the same thing as the Father, as the one you are in love with. So there are two kinds of obedience. The one is the putting you under the law, I have to obey. And the other one is, oh, can I obey you? Oh, I love to do the same thing as you. And this happens through a process with Peter in 3 years. So then he says, a certain moment in halfway, at getting to the end more, he says, Jesus says, where I go, you cannot follow me now, but later. Peter says, cannot follow you. I'll die for you. Even if all the others will run away, and me not now. And Jesus says, I don't need your death. Because that's your Adam death. That's your strength death. Your death that you can. I don't need it. I don't need it. And then he says, oh, will you? Before the rooster crows, you will deny me 3 times. And Peter says, that's not possible. And then the time comes that he hears the rooster and he has denied Jesus 3 times. That one crushed Peter. He needed to be crushed because he was a tough person. He was not really easily giving up his old nature. So with Peter, he needed a tough experience because his experience was, I can do it and I will do it. So after the denial, they meet at the lake of Tiberias, and it's so funny. The first time that Peter was fishing, Jesus was in the bush, and he spoke to the fish, go away, go away. All of you, me too, yes, you too, go away, go away. So all the fish went, and Peter, he was completely depressed, and we've catched nothing. Oh, just throw your net at the other side. Psst, come now. So all the fish came, ooh, full catch of fish. So now, 3 years later, with 7 other disciples, yeah, they followed Jesus 3 years. It was not like with breakfast that Jesus says, well, who has a good idea? Where are we going? It's not that way. Jesus received the marching orders and they followed. They just followed. 3 years they followed him. Now the one they followed is gone. So what should we do? They didn't know. So Peter says, well, I go fishing. That's after 3 years, I still know. And he says, look at that. Where I dropped it, my net is still here. Come on, we go fishing. So they go fishing. And the whole night, they catch nothing. There was someone in the bush. Go, go, go. He here he is again. Me too. Yes, you too. Go, go, all the fish. So realizing that Jesus commanded the fish, it's not in the Bible, but I read it between the lines. It's impossible. It's a miracle. Miracles come from Jesus. So Jesus, I'm convinced that he spoke to the fish to go. And he did it for the second time. I mean, this is, it's without a doubt. And so now Jesus just coming from the bush, standing on the shore. Then John, he says, it's Jesus. And then he says, he calls to them, do you have something to eat? He knew they had caught nothing. So Peter, he replies, you know how? He says, no, period. Frustrated the whole night. I mean, Jesus was gone. They didn't have anyone to follow. Then fishing, and it doesn't work out. And then he says, just throw your net at the other side. And then it begins the deja vu, you know, with Peter. What is happening here? So he throws it out. And again, even the nets are filled with fish. 173, I think, something like that. So then he goes to the shore. He jumps in the water. But actually, on his way to Jesus, he realizes this is the first time that we meet after my denial. So what will he say? You understand? There is something. And Jesus, he doesn't mention the denial. He says, let's have breakfast. Let's eat together. And then after the meal, he takes Peter. He says, hey, Peter, do you really love me more than all the others? And he asks him agape love. That is unconditional love. And normally, Peter would have said, yes, of course, I agape love you. But he knew that that was not the case. So now the result of the denial has his first fruit. He knows that he can't tell him, I agape love you. So he says, you know, I filio love you, brotherly love. Then Jesus says, just feed my lambs. And then he says it again. Do you agape love me? And Peter says, I feel you love you. And the third time, he says, do you feel you love me? It's wonderful. So feed my lambs and then feed my sheep. And then another time, feed my sheep. And you know, the beauty. Here it is in the beginning that Peter says that Jesus says to Peter, come follow me. He comes like he is, a fisherman. Then he walks a couple of years with Jesus. And then Jesus says, you can't follow me now, but later. And then, so he tells Peter that he is about to sin. But before he sinned, he is already promising him the restoration because he says, you can follow me later. This is blowing me away. He tells him you will sin. And he comes already with the promise of restoration before you actually have done the sin. That's the heart of my Father. You understand? This is so good. This is so beautiful. It tells you everything about the heart of the Father. So now he walked into the wall, Peter, and let me tell you, he is not the only one. Every one of us will have a time that you walk into the wall. and you can't continue. And that is the time that you must realize you cannot do it. The wall is there to let you know physically you cannot do it. So he wants to take you to a new level. He wants to take you in the process to a new dimension of your life with him. And that is where you tell him, I can do it, I need you. And then he takes you on his arm and then he says, watch me do it. I don't need a door. And the wall crumbles and you just can go further. It's with the Father. That experience, we need that experience. So Peter went through it. And then we see, in the end, so beautiful, where in the beginning, Jesus says, I'll make you fisher of men, after his identity. He now says, feed my lambs and feed my sheep. He received the identity of a shepherd. He receives now the identity that Jesus also carries. He says, I make you equal. I make you equal. You can follow me now. This is, now you're Peter in a new dimension. You're Peter in a new way. I'll give you what I have for you. Well, you like it? I would like to end with one more thing, because it has to do with Franklin. And this, of course, it's the same, because Peter, he could not make himself holy. He can't do the righteousness. So we can't. So the holy part is fully up to him. And we need to come into those situations where we experience it, that we can give up. God has given all of us a free will. The only thing is, you don't have a free will to do what you want. The free will is given so that you freely can give up your life. That's what the free will is for. He is not forcing you to give up your life. Remember the weight? And we are trying to hold on to our life, the weights, and try to carry. Sometimes you can't and you're tired or you're weak. And he says, no, your life is to let go of. But this is free will. Give up. Trust him. Come into that position. And he needs, because it needs to be done, otherwise it's a law otherwise. And he says, I don't want to give you a law, a new, yeah, the law of love. That's the only one. The law of love. Okay, let's end with Jonah. And yes, I wrote it and I said it, but it's so interesting is that Jesus asks this sinful Peter to follow him. Peter starts following Jesus unchanged. From a position that he realizes who he really is. So Peter realizes that he needs to be changed. And that's a good way of starting to follow Jesus. You realize that you need a change, but you can come as you are. And then the adventure starts. Okay. And then I think we come to Jonah. Is it? Yeah. Now, this one is this one. I forgot. Jesus comes with the glory. And you mentioned it at John 17 today, that the glory that was given to Jesus, he says, I've given to you. Now, what we saw with Peter is when he was confronted with the glory, he got afraid. He says, go away from me, I'm a sinful man. And this is through the whole Bible, when the glory comes, I talked about it before, but it's good, it fits here. When the glory comes, we see that people are afraid. Adam, the glory of God, God comes and he says, Adam, where are you? And he starts, I was afraid. The God that he was friends with, he talked and walked with him. After sin, there was this realizing or seeing who you really are. The glory comes and you know who you are, but you know that as you are, you're not good enough. And that makes that fear comes. What will he do? I deserve judgment. This is why Jesus, of course, came. Now, we see it at just the places in the Bible, Zacharias in the temple. Remember? He's in the temple. He was it was his turn, and when you have to work in the temple, you have to do things very, very carefully, because if you make mistake, you die. it's a funny job. He is privileged to work in the temple and then. The moment, so he is. You must imagine that he tries. I'm not forgetting anything. No, I'm doing everything right. Yes, I'm doing everything right. And then suddenly, Gabriel. Wow! But Gabriel is the archangel, big one, you know. So Zacharias, he thinks, I've done something wrong. Remember when your boss calls you into the office, you normally you're not going there and say, oh, probably I get a raise. Most of the time you think I get sacked. Why? I don't know. But so the glory comes, you think, oh, you realize who you are. I've done something wrong. Yes, you did. You are wrong. he is looking that he's drawing his sword and killing him, but he says, don't be afraid. He looks him into the eye and he says, don't be afraid. So he needs to be assured. It could have been different. Gabriel comes and Zechariah says, oh, you were on my bucket list. I always wanted to see you. I don't dare to ask, but can I touch your wing? You know, but he didn't. He was afraid. Mary, the mother of Jesus, Gabriel, comes into the little house. So he needs to bow down into a small house. And then, so he looks into the eyes of Mary and he says, don't be afraid. So Mary, the mother of Jesus, glory comes, fear. The shepherds. A legion of angels. For the shepherds, those poor guys, they were sinners, definitely. So they said, this is our last night. No, Mother Mary. No, they didn't say Mother Mary. And then the angels, they say, don't be afraid. Now, all of these are man and Peter before they received, before they were born again. So now we go to John in Revelation on Patmos. Who was John? Who? And which one? The one Jesus loved. Or he loved Jesus loved him. So he knew Jesus. Now, he's on Patmos. Was John on Patmos born again, yes or no? Yes. So now he's born again. Jesus comes in his glory. What happens to John? He falls down on his face. And Jesus has to assure him and say, don't be afraid, and touches him on his right shoulder. My goodness. Now, I have something that I didn't tell you, for those who remember this part. And that is, there will be a day that we will meet Jesus. Will he come in glory, yes or no?
Yes.
Definitely. Now, I don't believe that Jesus, on the wedding day, on his wedding day, has to tell his bride, don't be afraid. You know, I refuse to believe that. And now I know why he will not have to say this. Because when he is coming to pick his bride, glory will meet glory. This is the church. This is why we need to carry the glory. This is why we need to come into sonship. This is why we need the identity of sonship through the intimacy with the Father. This is why the church, the in-between church, will change into the new church, into the church where the world will see the glory of God through the church, through you and me. The world will see it with their eyes. Why? Because flesh will be able to carry the glory, just like Jesus did. That's why he became man, in order to show us that it is possible to carry the glory and to reveal the Father. Everyone who has seen me has seen the Father. Yeah, this is the crescendo. This is so beautiful. I'd like to end, but I can't. So no more fear. That is the point. And this is what John is. I'm not sure if I. Well, it is perfect love drives out all fear, because fear has to do with punishment, with the law. And the orphan is afraid. The son is not. So this is the position where we will come to. This is it. This is it. For every one of us. Every one of us. The whole wedding hall will be filled with those who are wearing the right garments. That's the heart of the Father. Why? Because he says, I want to present my Jesus, the most beautiful bride. You've done everything. Now it's my turn. I will make your bride shining and beautiful. I will give her grace. I will give her love. I will give her comfort, healing, everything. Why? Because I want my bride to be beautiful, the bride beautiful for my son. He deserves it. It makes it completely, you turn it from ecocentric to Christocentric. Jesus is in the center. And we are there to serve him and to come to him. Yeah. Now, just The small part? Are you still awake? Are you still? Or is it too much? Free to go home? I encourage you. It's recorded. Huh? You know, sometimes I don't realize that I am talking for 18 years about this revelation. And sometimes I want to tell too much. It's possible that some people think, well, now it's too much for me. Don't mind. But if we've heard a certain teaching that is not coming from the revelation for so long. So we need, it's not enough to hear a weekend. And it's not, if you like it, you can listen again to the, because it needs to sink in. But it's, you can find books, tapes. I would love that this would be your main focus. And I can't do that. I can only be an appetizer, like that you say, yes, that's what I want. And we need people who want to be immersed in this revelation, because out there are so many who have no clue, who are still under the law and far separated actually from the Father. And the Father he's looking eagerly for people that he can trust his message. You know, the main thing is that we need to learn to trust God. But trusting is a principle. If I say you need to trust God, you have no problem. If I say you need to trust a leader, there are people who say, well, and they are not as sure as when I said you need to trust God. Why? Because we have experienced bad things. So now, God says, I need a new type of leadership. A new type of leader. And I can only create a new type of leadership by those who fully trust me. Abraham. He gave him a promise. You will be the father of nations. And you will be a blessing to all the nations. You and your descendants will be a blessing for the nations. So the nations are depending on Abraham to receive the blessing. This is huge. All the nations is huge. That is why Abraham went through it all the way. He was promised to get a son or a nation, but it starts with one. First month, are you pregnant? No. Second month, are you pregnant? No. Month after month, he asks, no, 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 no. But we believe God. It's his promise. So we believe him. So after 40 years, are you pregnant? No, I can't be pregnant. I'm old. But we believe God. You know? Oh, that's a Rolly. No, no, it's a camel. No, but we believe. And then Sarah, he says, I have the solution. Hagar, I cannot be pregnant. Hagar, God said, you will be a father. He didn't say you will be a mother. So Ishmael, and God says, is not the son of the promise. And he waited till Abraham was over 100 years and his flesh was dead. So he also couldn't produce. Then, God says, now is my time. He needed to wait the whole lifespan of Abraham and Sarah until it was impossible, because it was not a son from the possibility of Abraham or Sarah. It was the son of the impossible. It was a promise of God. And then they received Isaac. And then, when Isaac was 14 or 16 years, he says, kill him. I mean, finally, you have your son. And still, Abraham trusted God. I mean, so he went to the very, very end. Why? Because he proved to trust God completely, so God could use him, so other people could put that trust in him. They received the blessing through him who trusted God. They could be depending on the one who was fully depending. This is what God is looking for. He wants to make the world depending on the church. You understand? He wants to make the world depending on the church. Why? Because that they, when they see the church, that they realize we can't do it. And they have God. They display God. That's what we need. This is what is going to happen. And we can be part. The only thing is, each and every one of us, we need to be prepared. And this is where we are in right now. Good. 5 minutes, Jonah. Here. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me. What do you think when you hear this sentence? What stands out? Which word? Wickedness, of course. Good, 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 good. 5 points. You already had one. That's what I thought for years. So, what happens when the wickedness comes before God? What is the normal reaction? What is in our mindset? When the wickedness comes before God, what comes?
Judgment.
Judgment comes. But if we now put off your glasses and put on new glasses. He says, the wickedness has come up before me. That's why I send a prophet so they can repent and they can escape from judgment. The escape of judgment is in the heart of God. I was like blown away. How could I read it wrong? It's because I have wrong glasses. Me was told that the judgment of God comes for, and this is the character, this is the heart of God. Don't play with me. Watch me. No, he sends He sends Jonah so that his grace, Franklin, grace will be seen. He needs to display the love of God and to show his holiness. And then you realize that you need the grace. It's beautiful. Oh. You see, the love is in your heart to go to these people, but they were wicked people. They did all kinds of very, very, very bad things to the Israelites. So Jonah, he said, I don't want to go. God is not asking him. He is saying, go to the great city. He says, do you want to go? He didn't. He says, go. Sometimes we think God is so polite. He isn't. Not always. He throws Saul from his horse in the children's Bible. In the normal Bible, it doesn't say horse. But it's more dramatic to fall from a horse than just stumble. And in 3 days, Saul is changed. Wonderful. So God broke into his life. And here he breaks in. And Jonah says, I don't want to go. He runs. Nineveh that way. Let me see. Yoppa. On the ship. So he goes down to Joppa, down in the ship, down. Remember from last year? We have a word in Dutch, and that is when you take a child, feet and arms, and you do this, and then you throw. Well, there is another one who catches them. And then you throw, and then they will be catched, or in the water, or whatever. And that is in Dutch, is called Jonassen. So, they Jonas him. So Jonas, Jonah, he says, Jonas me overboard. So he's going down to Joppa, down in the ship, down in the sea, down in the belly. And then he says, all right. He cries out to God. He knows he needs grace. Because he's dead. I mean, he's already in the belly of the fish. God has a button. You know, remember that, the remote control. So Jonas was thrown overboard, and God says, there he goes. And then with his remote control, he sends the fish. And then he puts the button, the red button, open your mouth and swallow without chewing. And then he is inside. And then he experiences the grace. And then he goes. And he can bring the message to the people of Nineveh. Still, he has not really understand, because then he is waiting still for the doom and destruction. And so I'm still figuring out how this works. But he needed, that's it for now, he needed grace himself. And where was the grace found? On top of the hill or down in the valley? So, when things are not looking good for you, and it wasn't looking good for Jonah, when things are not looking good, just remember that you're on the perfect spot to experience grace. And we need those who have experienced grace. Love, holiness, grace. From the heart, this is how the new revival will look. The church will be changed.